This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, welcome to the Chelsea Fancast, a special edition, as we like to do now and again, because we've got a lovely chap called Neil Fitzsimon on the show today, who not only wrote a book a few years ago, I'll ask him a little bit about that in a minute, called Rhapsody in Blue, which is basically about really the Kings of the Kings Road side from about 67 to when they won the Cup Winners' Cup in 71. But Neil has come out with a sequel earlier on this summer called A Deeper Shade of Blue, which chronicles to say it was a turbulent period in Chelsea's history is possibly the understatement of the year. But really, he goes from 1972 to 1977, when, of course, Eddie McCready's Blue and White Army raced back to Division One. And I will stop there rather than reveal what else happened and introduce the lovely Neil. Neil, lovely to see you.
Yeah, nice to speak to you.
Right, I mean, you know, first thing, I mean, obviously, you know, everybody now knows everybody through the wonderful medium of Twitter. Yeah. Maybe I should rephrase wonderful world of. But, but I mean, I've never actually met you, but I obviously know of you because I knew about the Rhapsody in Blue book, and it's lovely to get you on the show. But tell me a little about you and your relationship with Chelsea.
It started before the 67 Cup final against Spurs. I'd already been talked into supporting Chelsea by one of my uncles. He was Chelsea. I had another uncle who was Tottenham. Another one was Millwall. And he poisoned my mind against those two clubs pretty effectively. I loved Chelsea's kit and also loved Charlie Cook as well. And even though we lost to Tottenham that day, rather unfortunately, they've been my club ever since.
Yeah, I mean, then that's the lovely thing, isn't it? You know, everybody kind of finds their own peculiar way into it. I mean, a lot of the mates that I have, like you, you know, who I have the utmost respect for and almost envy of, because they're kind of born into Chelsea, you know.
Yeah.
Dads were Chelsea fan, granddads were Chelsea. My wife was like that, bizarrely. I mean, she was born in Battersea, and her mum was a Chelsea fan and she saw us win the title in 55. And her granddad was a Chelsea fan, used to take her to the bridge, funnily enough, around the time we're going to talk about. I never had any of that, so I really both respect and envy you guys for being into it like that. But, I mean, have I got this right in the book? I mean, you mentioned Pimlico. I mean, were you a Pimlico boy?
No. I was born in the Elephant Castle. I lived there. Then we moved out to Hemel Hempstead when I was 14. But then through Chelsea, made one of my best mates, you know, just got to talking to him on the terraces, and he came from Pimlico. So I spent a lot of time going around his house, meeting him there like every Saturday lunchtime, and then we'd walk all the way to the bridge past the King's Head and Eight Bells and stop in there and everything, and then like carrying down towards the bridge. Yeah, so That's my link to Pimlico is through my mate, who I mentioned quite a lot in the book, Gallagher, who was like, you know, my wingman in those days.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, many years later, Neil, I mean, the first flat I got in London was Pimlico, and I moved up.
Right.
It was just after university, so kind of late 80s. So I know that part of town very well. Even though I'm back in the countryside now, but there you go. So you mentioned Charlie Cook. Is he your favourite player all time?
My favourite player is Ian Hutchinson.
Lovely.
Because I think partly that all those injuries, and he was always looked upon as our salvation, like to team him up again with Ozzy up front. I mean, that one, you know, fantastic season they had together when we won the Cup in 69-70. I really took to him because, you know, he wasn't like a typical Chelsea player, really. I mean, he was like big, strong and muscular and everything. And he was like a perfect foil, I always thought, for Osgood. He never found another striking partner like that. And I just thought he's never say die attitude. And also, you know, the goal he got in the Cup final, you know, which saved us against Leeds. And I thought he was a brilliant player. And it was like, I think it was a tragedy that he had to retire when he was just, 27, I think, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a brilliant choice, Neil. I love that because so many people say Peter Osgood or Alan Hudson or Charlie Cook.
Yeah,
and I mean, I think Ian Hutch was one of the bravest players we've ever had, and sadly, you're right. And I mean, without jumping the gun, but I there are many reasons as to Chelsea's complete and utter, you know, fall from grace. Let's put it politely over the, you know, from 72 onwards.
Yeah.
You know, but I really think actually Ian Hutch being injured a lot and, as you said, was the perfect foil for Ozzy.
Yeah.
I think that's underestimated as in terms of the huge impact negative impact it had on us at that time.
Yeah. I mean, we bought the likes of Bill Garner and Chris Garland. I mean, and they just didn't have that like understanding and rapport. And as you said, it cost us a lot. I mean, one of my worst memories back from those days is going to that League Cup final against Stoke at Wembley, which I didn't see coming at all. Though I'd been to Orient the week before when we blew a 2-goal lead, and I started having doubts during that week. But I think with a fit Hutchinson alongside Osgood, it gave us much more variation up front, and it allowed us to fill into like the spaces that Hutch created for him. And I think it was a tremendous loss. From when was it? I think the injury started in February 71 against Southampton. He tore his cartilage. And then after that, it was just a litany of one injury after another.
Yeah, that's right. Very sad and a lovely man by all accounts. I mean, let's get into the book. It's A Deeper Shade of Blue. As I said, it came out earlier in the summer. You very kindly sent me a couple of copies, which is very lovely and decent of you. Now, I mean, I know you'd written Rhapsody in Blue, which, as I said earlier, was really, you know, when you started, as you said, you started supporting Chelsea in 67. It was real kind of a bit of a love letter to that Kings of the Kings Road side, wasn't
it? Yeah.
So this was kind of the natural sequel, really. You've picked up the story, really, from the end of that book, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the downturn of the club and what it meant. I mean, when I first moved out to Hemel Hempstead, it was like the beginning of, no, it was late 1969. And I was strutting around the place then because, you know, and then when Chelsea won the Cup in 1970, the kids I played football with, a lot of them, there was a couple of Tottenham supporters, most of them Watford, you know, being out in Hemel Hempstead. And, I was really, you know, bragging about Chelsea. And then I suffered years of abuse and ridicule after Watford got that money from Elton John, and we ended up as being like a mid-table second division side. So I saw both sides of the coin.
Well, indeed. I mean, you know, I tell you what, one of the things I love about this book is it in a sense is different, which you might think is an odd thing to say considering so much has been written about this period in Chelsea's history. But, you know, Tim Rowles, who of course I suspect you know very well.
Yeah.
You know, he's become, in a sense, you know, a real chronicler of both the Doherty era, the kind of post-Sexton era.
Yeah.
And now he's doing one of the Sexton era. You know, Kelvin Barker did much the same with the 80s, of course. I mean, I think he's written the seminal piece on the 80s. But actually, you know, this book, I think, fits in really well with Tim's books, because Tim's, you know, Tim is a details man. He's a chronicler, I would
say.
You've really, I think, managed to meld, you know, all the history and the matches and what happened and the details of that, you know, that only you can only have from being there. And by the way, I think you've got, like a lot of my friends, an astonishing memory, unlike me.
But, right.
But you. But the other thing I love about it is you. It, you know, it's also like a social history too.
Yeah.
Because you were how old were you in 72, Neil?
I was 16.
16.
Was, yeah, seven. Come up to 17. Right. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's really a story about, you know, what I mean. Teenage years can be mental, and I think it's you've got a lovely element of that in. Of course, the you know the playing football a lot as well.
Yeah,
you know, and what it was like to grow up in the '70s, which was a mad decade. Let's face it.
It was. I mean, when Pitch Publishing got interested in this book, you know, they'd read a couple of chapters, and they were a bit worried that the chapters that diversified a bit away from Chelsea, people might not be interested. But I decided I just didn't want to write a book that just was like, you know, we won this game so and so and so. So I've read so many of those books, and I just was a bit sick to death of them. So I wanted to do like a Cider with Rosie type thing about what it was like to grow up in those days. And I said I wasn't going to back down to them. I said it will work. And they agreed that, you know, perhaps in a longer form, it was, if it was interspersed, it'd be okay. And thankfully, yeah, it seems to have it worked out, because I think it's done quite well on Amazon. Both books have done quite well.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that, and it's well deserved. But I'm even more pleased to hear you took the Tom Petty approach and refused to back down.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you know your music, so I would imagine you know the Tom Petty story very, very well, which was very much the same. And I'm a great fan of that attitude. And it worked, absolutely, because it makes it different. And I tell you what, I could have, that long kind of, you know, spiel I just gave about why I like the book, I could have, you know, done it in one word. It's personal, Neil. And that's what comes across.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do, because, as you know, as you said, there have been so many books that I've just finished a book about Holland now. It's a Brilliant Orange. And yeah, it was okay. It was quite a good read. But as you said, I would like to have had more of his experiences in the book rather than just the facts and figures, which, you know, I know off by heart anyway, because they're one of my favourite teams, the 74 Dutch side. Yeah, so that's what I was trying to do, because I had some doubts about it. But my wife, Trudy, she said to me, you know, there must be loads of other blokes out there like you who all went through the same experience. So just stick with that. And that's what I did.
Yeah, I totally, totally get that. I mean, you know, in a way, Neil, you're preaching to the converted here, because that's absolutely what I love. And I mean, weirdly, a weird kind of parallel, I suppose. But that's kind of what we've always done on the Fancast. I'm not interested in just what happened in the games or the stats and stuff. And XG, if I ever hear that again, I'll probably punch myself. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's about the personalities and and the joy we have of following a club. Or
that's
despair.
Right.
You know, it can be both.
Yeah,
about it.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that's all part of it. It's like the visceral thing of going into a game and what it was like in those days. I mean, now it's a much more, what's the word for it? Sterile type experience than what it was back in the day in the 60s and the 70s, when, to be quite honest, you had to be really careful when you went to a game. I soon learnt to put my scarf under my Arrington or whatever I was wearing, Crombie, when I was outside the ground, you know, travelling from Euston to the games, because, you know, that was the danger you had in those days, being set upon by like stray bunches of Northerners waiting for easy prey. So it was a different era completely.
Well, it was indeed, wasn't it? I mean, it's definitely the decade that fashion forgot, as we all know.
Oh God, yeah.
But I loved your description of the Technicolor, you know, decade that was the 60s, and then when we got to the 70s, it was monochrome. And I remember when I moved up, I mean, I didn't move up to London until 84.
Right.
And you know what? Weirdly, that's how I remember it in those days. It just felt very monochrome.
It
was still, I mean, like places like Pimlico, there were still bombed out bits, you know. It wasn't gentrified like it is now.
That's right, yeah, because I think where Gallagher lived, it was Cumberland Street or Cumberland Terrace, something like that. And I went back there a few years ago to have a look around there, just, you know, for old times. And it, as you said, it's been gentrified now. It's completely different from when I used to go around there, because I think Gallagher's family had the whole, like, all the different floors, you know, they all lived like that and everything. But, you know, it's completely changed. And it was a bleak decade, the 70s, especially when you start getting to the tail end of the 70s.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Thatcher coming in, the winter of discontent, and then you have the miners' strikes. And, yeah, you know, I mean, all the trouble really started in the early 70s, like with Joe Gormley and the miners, when we had the power cuts and everything every night. You knew the lights were going to go out at 10 o'clock at night. It was a pretty grim time.
Well, that would, I think that might have been in 72, 73, actually. Might,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember as a kid, I would have only been about eight or nine then, but I remember, you know, candles everywhere and, you know, very, very weird. And of course, you know, you had like three channels on the TV and that was it. Mad time. You were right as well. I mean, obviously, I wasn't really going in those days, but everybody I know who was always said exactly what you said. It was quite dangerous, you know. Hooliganism had really kind of, I mean, you know, having kind of really, I suppose, started in the 60s, it had taken on a whole different level, hadn't it, by the 70s?
Yeah, I mean, I got set upon by Man United supporters at Euston coming back from a game. That was in March 69. I think I wrote about that in the first book. And then... in January 1970, I received a kick in the back when John Holland scored down at the clock end when we absolutely wiped the floor with them 3-0. And I said to my sister, who went to the games with me that season, I said, whatever you do, if Chelsea score, don't go mad. And of course, when they scored, I went mad. And the next thing, somebody had given me quite a whack in the back with, I don't know if it was a Doc Martin or whatever, but it, you know, it really bloody hurt and everything. But there was terrible fights. They delayed the kickoff that day because there were like iron bars and chains being used down at the clock end. It really was, you know, what was really great was that we, I think we scored a couple of goals in the last 10 minutes really to rub their noses in it as well. So it was, I think Peter Marinello made his debut that day and got marked out of it by Eddie Mack. So... Yeah, it was dangerous.
Okay, well, look, you know, you start the book really, you know, it's the 72-73 season, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're still, you know, high on the fact that we won the FA Cup in 69-70 and then the Cup Winners' Cup in 70-71. Yeah. In 72, of course, as you mentioned a minute ago, we lost the League Cup final to Stoke City, which, you know, we were nailed on favourites for.
Oh, we were.
But nobody had an inkling, really, of what was to come, did they? I mean, you know, we've got this, the new East, the East Stand's demolished and we start building the new East Stand. I mean, basically everything in the garden looked rosy for Chelsea on the outside, didn't it?
Well, it did. I mean, and we started the 72-73 season quite well. I mean, we thumped Leeds on the opening day. I went up to Derby a couple of weeks later, and when they were the reigning champions, we beat them up there. And I think in October, we actually won at White Hart Lane. And then... it started in the autumn of 72 that we started losing games. I remember I went to a game down at Southampton where we played them off the pitch and somehow managed to lose 3-1. And then we started looking, there was a vulnerability, I think, in the side that was creeping in. And by like Christmas and the new year, I mean, we'd slipped right down to mid, I think we finished 12th that season as well. I mean, we had good runs in both cups. I think we lost to Arsenal in the quarters of the FA Cup, and unbelievably lost to Norwich in the semi-final of the League Cup, which was pretty grim as well. Yeah, but I you could just see signs of the discontent there, and it didn't help having a ground where there was like, all you could see was a railway track and a graveyard stuck behind it, you know, and the players like in porter cabins as well. I don't know, there was an air of like despondency that was coming down, you know what I mean? And it was quite sad in a way because it... You know, I'd only known like real success, and all of a sudden you just realise, you know, that things were turning for the worse.
Yeah, and as I said, it in a way that doesn't make sense because, you know, Brian Mears had this great vision for the club. Yeah. You know, we were, as I said, we were still very high on the idea that we'd actually finally won a few things. But I think in a way, you know, for me, that 72-73 season was really the beginning of the end, wasn't it? It was certainly the beginning of the end for the Kings of the Kings Road side. I mean, you mentioned the semi against Norwich. That was the fourth time in 14 months we'd lost a cup tie when we were absolutely nailed on favourites.
Yeah, that's right.
And that was the last semi-final, major semi-final we'd had for 12 years.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think when we played Norwich, we were due to have played them the week before Hutch's comeback on the Saturday, but that was rained off because I remember I was going to go to that game. And then Hutch came back on the Saturday and we beat Norwich 3-1 and he scored two goals and it was like the prodigal son returning. And then we played them on the Wednesday night and somehow contrived to lose 2-0 to them. Then I think there was that in the return game, the fog came down when we were losing 3-2, but they replayed the game and then I think we lost 1-0 in the replayed game.
That's right. And as we were saying, I mean, that was our... I mean, it was our worst finish since 62. I mean, I think that, as you said, you know, from spring onwards, we were in relegation form, weren't we? Something like one win in 10 was the worst run under Sexton at that point, I think.
Yeah, I remember going to, I think, a game in the spring of 73 when we lost 3-1 at home to Stoke. A player called Tommy Ord scored. I never saw so much more of him. And they just completely gave us the runaround, you know what I mean? And it was really sad. And, you know, where there'd been like passionate support everywhere, people were starting to, you know, like get onto the team and everything and make jokes at them and everything. And it was a really depressing time.
It was indeed. Apart from the one bright spot on that season, which was Raquel Welch turning up, of course.
Oh, yeah, against Leicester. Yeah, I went to that game. Yeah, I saw her walk down the side of the pitch, yeah.
That was brilliant, wasn't it? I mean, if we go into 73-74, I mean that's really, I think, where the wheels really do begin to fall off. And, I mean, I think, you know, if we set this in some sort of, you know, historical context...
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy to say, you know, everybody goes, oh, well, you know, the players like Osgood and Hudson threw their toys out of the pram and it was all a bit, you know, toxic in the dressing room. But I think, you know, and, I mean, the other thing is people like Eddie Mack, you know, some of the older players that had been very much part of the famous Kings of the Kings Road start were really getting past their sell-by date.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, if we look at it now with a modern lens, we could say, well, you know, what we needed, Neil, was to spend some money on rejuvenating the side. We've got these brilliant youngsters coming through, like Ray Wilkins, Gary Locke, Swain, Mickey Droy. We just need to, you know, maybe buy three or four players, replace some of the older players, and we go again. But of course, we couldn't, could we? Because financially, we were absolutely stuffed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, broke. I mean, that the East End almost put the club out of business. I mean, it was considered a white elephant for years. I mean, when it finally opened in 74-75, I mean, that season ended in relegation. Looking at it in a modern way, that's what we needed to do. You know, I think Eddie Mack had by 73, so I don't think he played in that season, if I remember rightly. I think 72-73 might have been his last season. And it was looking tired. And also, I think the problems with Osgood had been going on for some time. I mean, you know, from that transfer listing in August 71. And I think Sexton was a little bit uneasy with players like Hudson and Cook and Osgood, who I think he saw their talent and couldn't quite understand why they only turned it on in some games, like, and you know, big match players. But that was definitely that 73-74 season was utterly miserable.
Yes, it was. I mean, you know, I think the reality is, as it often is, isn't it? It's never just one thing, is it? It was just a kind of a, I think we had a perfect storm of stuff going on. You know, obviously Ozzy and Hudson were not happy campers. Yeah. Some of the side were getting past their sell-by date. The youngsters that were coming in, whilst good, were untried. We had absolutely no money, couldn't really buy anybody.
No.
And as you said, Sexton had an issue, I think, didn't he, with managing certain talents.
Yeah.
Egos, I think, is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think I said that in the book, A Deeper Shade of Blue. I find it a bit rich that he accommodated Stan Bowles when he went to Queen's Park Rangers. Yeah. I found that a real strange one because, you know, Stan was no saint and we all know about that. He liked to to go, you know, down the bookies and everything. And he was a bit of a loose cannon. But, you know, I'd have loved to have seen Stan Bowles at Chelsea, to be quite honest. That he accommodated him. And I just found it a bit, and I found it a bit rich when he came down a few weeks after we'd got rid of him and QPR murdered us 3-0 at the Bridge with like David Webb in the side as well. It was quite a chastening experience.
Yeah, I mean, I often think about this season and certainly the next one is a, you know, because I mean, you know, by the end of this season, Ozzy goes to Saints, doesn't he? I think in the spring.
Yeah.
Hudson's gone to Stoke. So they've made, you know, just over 500 grand selling those two. But it seems to me that the whole dressing room has completely lost it. Sexton gets sacked, doesn't he?
October 74. I think when we lost 1-0 at home to Wolves, that was his last game in charge. Yeah, I mean, it seemed a crazy decision, really, to let those two go, you know, earlier that year, and then back the manager and then sack him a couple of months into the new season.
Yeah, it was really, really odd, wasn't it? I mean, Rick Glanville sums this season up, I think, absolutely perfectly. He says, systemic dysfunction, anarchy and chaos.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
It kind of sums it up, doesn't it? Beautiful.
Yeah. I know. I remember, I mean, going back to 73, 74, even Hutchinson was put on the transfer list by Dave Sexton for going on holiday with Ozzy without telling anybody. And then he was quickly taken off the list when he came back because he scored. I've described it in Rhapsody in Blue, one of the best goals I've ever seen at Chelsea. And there was only about 9,000 people there. And it was a midweek game during the power strikes, and he scored in a 3-0 win. He hit a volley like a bullet past the Burnley keeper, and it's such a shame that there's only 9,000 of us there, because they were playing the games about 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something, because they couldn't use any floodlights and everything. And I met Gallagher there, and it was such a fantastic goal. And I think a couple of weeks later he took Hutchinson off, but I just thought, who's next? Because we'd already lost Charlie Cook and Paddy Mulligan to Palace, which was a catastrophic decision, I thought. Because, I mean, you look back now, and I think Charlie was barely 30 years old. And just to offload him like that was almost unbelievable.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Good one.
Yes, I mean, there are some really strange decisions going on. And I mean, who knows? I mean, without talking to Brian Mears, which you can't do.
No.
You know, I wonder how much of that was down to, you know, trying to sort the debt out. I mean, you know, as I said, they made over 500 grand, didn't they?
Yeah.
Hudson and Osgood, so perhaps that was going on there. Just picking up on something you said then, actually, Neil, because that's often intrigued me.
Yeah.
You know, because the attendances were falling and falling and falling at this time of year. I think we avoided relegation, thankfully, by beating Burnley 3-0, didn't we? And that was the lowest attendance since 1938, 8,171.
Yeah. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
God.
I mean, I know the power cuts were clearly an issue, but it wasn't just that, surely.
No. I mean, we were in deep trouble then. I mean, I think we finished, was it 18th that season? I think we even somehow contrived to lose to Manchester United. It got relegated that season 3-1 at home and everything. So, yeah, it was... It was a depressing, you know, not to go, you know, it was all doom and gloom, but it was, there was just an air of despondency about the whole place. You know, it reminded me of like a cinema where everyone decides that the film's no good and you can hear all the seats going up, you know what I mean? So everyone's leaving. It had that atmosphere about it, you know.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think you could see that the decay had set in wherever you looked, you know, the players, the toxicity in the dressing room, the stand, the issues with that, the north stand crumbling away.
Oh, that, yeah.
Emptiness. It was grim, wasn't it? That's the only way to describe it.
Yeah, it was. And we got sick of the sight of seeing like the away supporters down the other end all celebrating while we're just standing there. And it, you know, teams that wouldn't have lived with us a few years before. I mean, I just, as you said about the 8,000, you know, against Burnley, whatever it was, you know, you just go back 4 years in March 1917, I was in a crowd of 62,000 to play Man United the week after we got to the cup final, you know, and it was, I think about 15,000 were locked out that day as well. It was pandemonium getting in that day. So yeah, it was a real sharp fall from grace.
Yes, it was indeed. My bad. Sexton, of course, goes in the 74 season, the next season, doesn't he, actually?
Yeah.
But that, I mean, you know, we basically had a very average season in 72-73, finishing 12th.
Yeah.
73-74, we finished just 1 point above the relegation zone in 17th.
Right, yeah.
Obviously, we all know, most Chelsea supporters will know, we end up getting relegated in 74-75.
Yeah.
But again, you know, even in spite of what we were saying, I mean, I think it's a good point, actually. All the supporters knew what was going on, but the club seemed to be in cloud cuckoo land. The East Stand opens, as you said. We also signed David Hay, didn't we,
from
Celtic after the World Scotland doing really well in the World Cup in 74, in fact.
Yeah, and he played really well in that, and I was quite staggered that he actually decided to come to Chelsea, even though, I mean, you know, I've got no love for Scottish football. I think it's an absolute joke. I was delighted because I'd watched him in the World Cup that summer, and I think he was named in one of the teams, a lot of the best 11 of that World Cup. So I was quite amazed. But again, that never worked out because he was, like, beset with injuries pretty soon after he joined the club. I think he seemed to miss more games than he played in, David Hay, even though in that promotion season, 76-77, he was excellent.
Yeah, he was a quality player, wasn't he?
But yeah, he was.
Definitely beset by injuries. I mean, that season, you know, really kind of in terms of how we played, followed on from the one before. And we soon end up in a relegation fight. I mean, again, even I remember this game, bizarrely. When I was at school, a couple of my best mates, one was a big Chelsea fan.
Yeah.
One was a big Spurs fan.
Right.
So, and I was, it was the Spurs fan's birthday. Now, by some kind of weird serendipity, I've just been in Trent Bridge with him for the last 4 days, getting horribly drunk watching the crickets. He's still a mate now, bless him.
Yeah.
But he went off with his dad and my other mate, who was a big Chelsea fan, to White Hart Lane towards the end of the season for a match that's now known as the Battle of White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
I would imagine you were there, Neil.
Yeah, I went that day, with Gallagher. We actually went into a pub to have a few stiffeners before we got in there that day because I didn't know we were going to face it. We actually saw the Chelsea team coach go past us up the Seven Sisters Road that day. And I always remember seeing John Hollins just sitting there, you know, looking really miserable. And I didn't know that he'd been dropped that day. In fact, I don't think he ever played for Chelsea again after that. I mean, I think Ray Wilkins, that was his first game as captain. And then, no, Teddy Maybank, and I think, what was that name of that thought? John Sparrow were playing. But, oh, yeah, that was a grim day. I mean, because Spurs were equally as bad as us, really. And, I do think if it had been us at home, it would have been them that would have taken the drop. But, yeah, that was a pretty fierce day, and there was loads of trouble outside there that day. But I don't know if you read it in the book. Jack Taylor, the referee, was actually in our compartment on the tube train.
Brilliant.
Coming back, which just seems, I mean, almost incredible now. But I turned to Gallagher and I said, what do you think of the referee today? And he, you know, I won't repeat what he said. I said, you think that? I said, you know, and I said, you'd tell him that? He said, I really would. I said, well, he's just standing over there. Go and tell him. My mate Gallagher, because he was a big bloke, Jack Taylor, and everything. But he just fronted it out. Yeah, that was a pretty miserable day going down there and seeing that. But, you know, I'd almost resigned myself to it by that after. I remember the date. It was April the 19th, 1975. I'll never forget that day.
Yeah, I mean, I think us, Spurs, and there was another London team, wasn't there, that was locked up in this relegation battle. Who was it? It might have been Arsenal, actually, you know. They were in and around it, weren't they? I mean, they finished 16th in the end, but...
Yeah, because we beat them at Highbury that year. I remember that because I went to that game. I think it was over the Christmas that year. Because I think West Ham won the Cup, so they had a pretty decent season. But, yeah, it was a straight shootout between us and them, wasn't it? But thankfully, you know, it's all come good in the end. I'll take the relegation over what we've achieved in the years since that.
Well, there is that. I mean, it was just mental. And again, it seems to me to be, you know, kind of almost emblematic of what was going on at the time. You know, the gates were locked before kickoff. Jack Taylor, I think he delayed the kickoff. There was loads of fighting on the pitch, kung fu fighting on the pitch. I always remember that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's footage of that, isn't there? With the kids with their silk scarves tied around their wrists and everything. And
I honestly, Neil, I am a lover, not a fighter. I mean, and I would be about as useful as a piece of fudge in a fight. But I remember as a nine, ten-year-old. It would be nine at the time. You know, I see these two mates had gone up there, and I don't know why I couldn't go now. But anyway, and I remember watching it on the news because it made the news, the 6 o'clock news, and there was a part of me that was like really jealous that I hadn't been there because it looked absolutely mental. And as a 9-year-old, it looked exciting. You know what can you say?
Yeah. Oh, because I think we had the Park Lane end that day, Chelsea. We took over that, and there wasn't so much. Again, there was fighting on the pitch and everything like that, but the trouble outside was 10 times worse. I mean, you know, you heard the sirens going as soon as the game's finished. And I remember that actually me and Gallagher sat around for a while on the terraces and waited for it to disperse a bit because, you know, we'd been caught there a couple of times before after the League Cup semi-final when we knocked Spurs out with that last-minute Hudson goal. I saw somebody push through a plate glass window and I thought, no, I'm going to wait this time and let all that mob go.
Well, as you said earlier, it was a pretty dangerous time then. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, we do get relegated. We lose 2-0 to Spurs. I mean, we're a bit unlucky, I think. I think Ray Wilkins, who was the captain that day, as you said, Mr. Sitter, and of course, he was captain that day because Eddie Mack was made manager, or certainly, I think, on a kind of a preliminary basis. But he was the manager.
Yeah, he was.
And he decided, basically, to dispense with the old brigade and bring in the youngsters, because I think he knew he'd been involved with the youth team, hadn't he? That season,
he had, and I think that was his first thing. He dropped, I mean, one of his mates from the glory days, John Hollins. Kemba went. I think Chris Garland most probably left by then. I think they both ended up at Leicester. I've got a feeling that perhaps he might have saved us if we'd have made the change
earlier.
In October, rather than Ron Stewart taking over, who'd been really a man that nobody knew. I mean, he was the assistant to Dave Sexton. You know, and we just thought, well, we're having to do that because we've got no money. We can't attract anybody like a top manager in. But I think if Eddie Mack had got in there, he might possibly have saved us because some of our performances in those games, the last couple of games of the season against Sheffield United and Everton, were really good, even though we didn't win either game. You can see signs there that he was giving like fresh blood a chance.
Well, that's certainly what he did. And I mean, you say it in the book, and again, I think so many people I know of your vintage who were going then say the same thing. But, you know, that Eddie Mack side that he created, I mean, the first season was 75-76.
Yeah.
Then, of course, the 76-77 season, which we got promoted. But it's one of their favourite teams. It's kind of iconic in a way. I mean, I don't know if you were at the book launch for Smithy and DJ and Kelvin and Mark Meehan's book, the Eddie Mack book.
No, I wasn't. No.
Well, I mean, you know, it was quite weird being there for me because I mean, I wasn't going when that team was around, but I grew up knowing about that team, and Ray Wilkins was one of my all-time Chelsea heroes.
Oh yeah, great, brilliant.
Yeah, so I kind of went there, like, you know, I felt part of it, but a little bit on the outside. But it was quite fun viewing it from the outside.
Yeah,
and seeing all of my mates just so starstruck because they had the whole of that. Well, all of those who were still with us of that team there, as one. And Eddie, who of course very rarely makes it over here, and everybody says it's one of the best evenings they've ever had, which kind of shows you how much love there still is for this particular team. But there was good reason, wasn't there, Neil? Because he brought the youngsters in. Ray was the captain. They were exciting, weren't they?
Yeah, they were great. I mean, that, as you say, that first 75-76, I think we tried to play our way out of the division that year, and we got bullied by quite a few teams. I mean, there were the likes of Bolton and Sunderland, who looked like, you know, something from the land of the Giants and everything. But by the time that 76-77 season, there seemed to be like a steel within the side, like a swashbuckling type thing, and we weren't taking any prisoners. And I think I said in the book, I was quite delighted that I think the Notts County manager said in about our second game of the season that we were nothing but a bunch of animals. And I thought, well, that's, you know, that's what I want to watch. You know, we can turn it on, but we can also dish it out, because David Hay and Steve Wicks and that lot, they wouldn't take any prisoners. Yeah, and it was just a fantastic, it made you like, you know, you got, they brought the pride back to the club, really. You know, it was like the dawn of a new era.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, again, you know, history and hindsight are very interesting things, aren't they? Because I think the transformation from the despair that had been, I mean, we said decaying, didn't we? And we, you know, the club had been decaying for three or four seasons. And in a way, by bringing in all these youngsters, and also Eddie played really good attacking football, I think. And I mean,
oh, he did.
I mean, when I had to put the 50 years thing together, we were all watching as much of this on YouTube as we could, and I was really surprised actually how good the football was.
Yeah, they were really good. I mean, one of my favourite games from that era is when we beat Southampton 3-1 at the Bridge in October '76. With I think Southampton scored with about 20 minutes to go to take the lead. And I mean, they had the likes of Ted McDougall, Shannon, Peter Osgood, and various other, like, you know, seasoned pros. And we absolutely thumped them 3-1. We scored like three quick fire goals with Ray Wilkins getting the third one. And we absolutely played them off the pitch, you know what I mean? And it was a real gung ho style of football that, you know, I really miss to this day, because I don't know about you, but sometimes I find like modern football a little bit anemic. All this
sideways,
you know,
passing
backwards. Oh, God, it drives me mad. It really does.
Absolutely, me too. I mean, it was perfectly set up, though. I mean, you know, Ray Wilkins basically in the centre mid, just pinging balls left, right, and centre. But but usually, nearly always forward. He didn't become a crab until he went to Man United. That's the reality.
No,
I mean, he was our top scorer in 75-76, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, did he get about 18 goals or something?
12
like that?
Goals, 12 goals.
12. Yeah. Oh, right, okay. Yeah, because I saw him score like a fantastic goal against Oxford in one of the opening games of that 75-76. I couldn't believe it was the same player when he went to Man United. Yeah. And I couldn't quite work out why Dave Sexton, who obviously knew him from the Chelsea days, had turned him into this conservative, you know, play it safe midfielder. I just, you know... One of the best midfielders I've ever seen down at the Bridge and everything. I saw him make his debut against Norwich on a Friday night. And even then, you know, you could see just in that one, I think it was in 73, 74, what a class player he was. As I say, it mystified me what happened to him at Manchester United.
Indeed it did. I mean, that first season under Eddie in 75, 76, I mean, actually, yeah. Even though we've been effusing about it, I mean, we didn't win our any of our last nine games. We actually ended up finishing 11th, which I think is the worst worst we'd finished up to that point, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they were just inconsistent, like a lot of teams with youngsters are, weren't they, really?
Yeah, I mean, because I remember towards the end of that season, we played Bristol City away, who got promoted that year, and we got a 2-2 draw down at Ashton Gate, and we were really delighted, you know, me and Gallagher. We thought they played really well. It was on Match of the Day that night, and Kenny Swain, I think Gary Stanley got our goals, and they really took the game to Bristol City, and were unlucky not to win. And so me and Gallagher were really up about that, and our last home game was against Orient. We went to that day, you know, nice sunny day, thinking this is it, you know, we thought, well, a nice home game against Orient to, you know, round the season off or something, you know, at least a little bit more hope. And we lost 2-0 at home to them, to Orient. I think Laurie Cunningham scored a really great goal. And as you said, one week it was, we actually beat Sunderland that year. I think we won the league that year. We beat them in one of our best performances. But then, you know, we were losing home games. The worst one was the Oldham one in January 76. That was just the pits. A 3-0 home defeat, and we sat in the East Stand, me and Gallagher and a few other my mates, a half-empty stand, watching them being absolutely trounced by Oldham Athletic. You know, I think it was a crowd of about 13,000, something like that. That day, it was pretty desperate.
Hmm. It all comes together, though, doesn't it, in the 76-77 season, which is, very much. Well, so fondly remembered, I think, by anybody who was there. It was a real...
Yeah.
It was real fun, wasn't it? Again, it just all kind of clicked, didn't it, really? I think that's the best way to put it, Neil.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, from the opening... I went on the opening day when we played Orient down at Brisbane Road, and Jock Finnison got a goal about 3 minutes from the end. Right up till, like, Christmas, some of the football we were playing was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, we're just sweeping teams away. We faltered a little bit slightly in the new year, and that's when he brought the likes of Charlie Cook back into the side, and Ron Harris came back, and Benetti came back in goal, because the one thing about that season was that when we did lose that season, we got absolutely murdered. I think Millwall did us 3-0, Luton did us 4-0, and Charlton did us 4-0. So I could see why that Eddie Mack brought in some of the old stalwarts just to get us over the line at the end. You know, I mean, we went up quite safely in the end, but I mean, I was starting to get a bit nervous, as you always do, that after all this brilliant football we played, we'd miss out yet again.
Indeed. And didn't a lot of our supporters kind of build a few bonfires at the Valley when we got beaten 4-0 by Charlton?
Yeah, they did, and they put all the windows out in the Charlton Social Club as well.
Unbelievable.
And I remember coming back on the overground train back to Victoria from there, and someone was pulling the communication cord every 5 minutes, you know, and a 4-0 defeat, and you know, all of us wanted to go home.
Yeah.
But some, like Charlie, thought it'd be like a great laugh just to keep on stopping the train every 5 minutes.
There's always one, isn't there?
Yeah.
That's the other thing, really. I mean, you know, maybe you would have a more definitive view on it than me, but in a sense, it's kind of 74, well, 75, 76, 76, 76, yeah. 77 were really our away support. Suddenly,
yeah.
You know, that, I think really, you know, I mean, forget the hooliganism for a minute, but just the numbers that were going, I think that's where
amazing.
This, you know, where it all really started in a way, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was absolutely. Well, I think there was almost like a badge of honour of sticking with Chelsea in those days when you went away, that no matter how badly things were going at the club, they still had a loyal following and everything. Yeah, and the away support was tremendous, you know, and it has been ever since, really. Even before that, it was great, to be quite honest. I mean, I went to the cup final at Old Trafford in 1970, and that was quite amazing. You know, the Stretford end packed with, I think, I don't know how many thousands of Chelsea. And of course, there's that famous day I was behind the goal when Kerry Dixon got that goal against Arsenal in 1984 at Highbury. I think there was about 20,000 Chelsea supporters behind that guy.
Yeah,
it was that was unbelievable.
Excellent stuff. I mean, did you go to Athens, by the way?
No, I didn't. No, my dad wouldn't wear that one. You know, that was a bit too much. You know, I'd got it in the neck in the semi-final when we played Man City because our train broke down, and he blamed it on me for turning up in the early hours of the morning, which I explained that our tube train got stuck at High Street Ken and it wouldn't move, and it was quite a warm evening. But somehow, you know, he was blaming me. So yeah, I'd have loved to gone to Athens, and I unfortunately had to suffer it listening to. Well, the game wasn't even on the radio. That night it was England Wales, and they just said score updates. And I remember sitting in the kitchen at home, and they said, "As far as we know, Chelsea have won the Cup Winners' Cup." And then this idiotic BBC bloke came on and said, "Hang on a minute, there's been another goal in Athens." And I just knew, you know, I just thought, and they actually put extra time on the radio, and they absolutely battered us, Real Madrid. I think, you know, it was real like last ditch defending. I think Webby cleared one off the line, but. As I say, I suppose, you know, I've never been so disappointed to think that they, you know, the bloke was rubbing it in, saying, "Oh, they actually brought the cup out and put the blue and yellow tassels on it and everything like that." But at least it allowed us to see it on the Friday night when we, which was televised.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. I mean, there was only about 200 Chelsea fans there, I think, weren't there, that stayed.
Yeah.
But it's a bit like the Sex Pistols gig at the Free Trade Hall in Manchester. Now there are about 200,000 people who say they were there, I think. But
yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did know one bloke who's about 5 or 6 years older. He actually went out. He was there for both games. And I don't think I mentioned him in the book. Arthur wasn't one of my favourite people. I don't think he had the imagination to lie about it. But he wasn't even. He was a Luton supporter, but somehow he went out there for a jolly up for that week.
Brilliant. I do know several people who went, actually.
Yeah.
I'm delighted to say, you know, some really who have become really, really good mates. And I mean, one of whom said it took him about 2 weeks to hitch back because he had no money. I mean, but there were stories that there are some people that never came back. They just stayed there, didn't they? Got married, made a life.
Yeah, they made a lot of friends, didn't they? Yeah. Apparently, there's still bars out there with all the chicks. I thought, yeah, it's amazing.
It is indeed. Anyway, back to 76, 77. And it's funny that we're talking really about. You know, the tremendous away support we had, because the key match really all boiled down to Wolves away, didn't it? We were competing with Wolves to try and get promoted that season.
Yeah.
And I think Forest as well, they were in the firmament. This would have been Clough's Forest who go on to win the league the next season, I think.
Yeah, unbelievably.
It was us Wolves and Forest. We have to go to Molineux.
Yeah.
Apart from the fact we couldn't, because apparently there were bans in place for the Chelsea fans.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I never went to that. I had to suffer that. Ran at my girlfriend's house again, waiting for updates on the radio. But I think that's where that thing came in, that you can't ban a Chelsea fan. And I think there were thousands of Chelsea up there that day, from what I've seen. And on the when you see the footage at the end of the game, there's a lot of Chelsea up there. But that was a particularly taxing afternoon to wait for the updates coming through to that. And I think when Wolves equalised, I thought, oh God, here we go. You know, there's about 10 minutes left, but thankfully it all turned out well. And even better that Spurs practically were confirmed as being relegated the same afternoon.
Yeah, a definition of a win-win.
It definitely was.
But it was interesting, actually, because in the commentary, I don't know, it might have been Motson, but the commentary, actually, it wouldn't have been Motson because it was ITV.
I think it was Hugh Johns.
Hugh Johns, but he mentions it because when Chelsea scored, obviously loads of Chelsea goes up, and he said, "Oh, there's a lot of support for Chelsea in here, and I don't quite know why, because they're supposed to be banned."
That's right. Yeah, yeah, because it's Tommy Langley, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I think that was Hugh Johns. I really like Hugh Johns. I thought a brilliant commentator.
Great commentator, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Anyway, so mass celebration when we have our final game at the Bridge against Hull City.
Yeah.
And that's also gone down in folklore for various reasons, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I was on the West Stand benches that day. I did mention earlier in Deepest Shade of Blue that I went onto the pitch after our last game against Stoke in 72 when the old East Stand was coming down, and actually managed to score with a tennis ball in the net down at the shed end before we got thrown off the pitch. But by 77, I was like 20, about 21 then, so I decided not to go on the pitch. Yeah, but I mean, it was a perfect opposition, really, Hull. I mean, they just laid down and died, really. But I mean, it was a great day.
Yeah, Neil, go.
Only really battered by the one against Leeds in 84, which I fondly remember with Ken Bates's comment about Leeds having a really bad day, which caused, he came out with a megaphone and said something disparaging about Leeds having a really rotten day, and their supporters then started lobbing bricks all over the place.
Didn't they kill the scoreboard that day?
They did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They did.
I do remember that. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, Eddie had to come on the pitch. Didn't need to, like, basically say, look, don't, you know, stop invading the pitch. Otherwise, the game would be abandoned.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he came out with his trendy 70s, like, overcoat with his pendant around his neck and his shades and everything. Yeah, he definitely was a character, Eddie, mate. I really, you know, I really liked it. I liked him as a player. And I thought it was a tremendous loss letting him go like that. It's one of the worst decisions the club ever made.
Yeah, I mean, you do talk about it in the book, obviously, because it was just so heartbreaking for many supporters. But how did you feel? I mean, how did you find out and how did you feel about it?
I found out round at my girlfriend's house. I'd been working that afternoon and I came back. I think Virginia Wade was playing in the women's final at Wimbledon. And I wanted to see how she'd got on. And I just picked up the local newspaper, which really just dealt with Watford, you know, about their trials and tribulations, which I wasn't a bit interested in. And I just saw in the stop press down the side, Eddie McCready resigns as Chelsea manager. And I just couldn't quite believe it. You know, it's like a bit that's made that season almost like bittersweet, really, because we know what's coming at the end of it. And it ruined it. It didn't ruin it. I mean, great that we're back in the first division, but I did have worries then that when Ken Shillitoe was appointed, because Eddie Mack, I don't know, you know, he was a bit like in the Tommy Docherty mould, wasn't he? He'd make brush comments that we're going to, like, you know, we're going to terrify the first division, and that just went out of the club. And, you know, yeah, it was a real blight on that season, I thought.
Well, it was like the death of hope, wasn't it, in a way?
Because,
I mean, we'd played such great football this season. It really kicked. Yeah. You got all these youngsters, Ray Wilkins as the captain. It was all looking very, very good.
Yeah.
And as you say, when Eddie goes, you kind of knew that was, well, that's that, really. And, I mean, it's you know, it's kind of lovely to talk about these things in a hypothetical way. But, I mean, how do you think we would have done in the first division the next season if Eddie had stayed?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't. We survived that first season, didn't we? After he'd gone, I think we might have finished like mid-table, something like that. It was the passion was missing from the club as well, and there was a different style of play the following season. As I say, it's hypothetical. I'd like to think that swagger that he'd instilled in the club would have like seen us through games. There were signs of it that following season. You know, that we absolutely murdered Liverpool in the FA Cup, knocked them out of the cup, and then we beat them. What people forget, a few weeks later, we beat them 3-1 down at the Bridge when Tommy Langley scored an absolutely fantastic goal against them. So there were signs there, but I mean, you know, I think it would have been difficult to have improved it that much without like making a few signings, really.
And of course, we still had no money. I mean, I think we were $3 million in debt. The beginning of this season, I think a lot of people thought that either we got promoted or we'd go bust.
That's right. Well, yeah, that on 76, yeah, because I write in the book about in the summer of 76, just seeing a news board outside like Chelsea face extinction and everything. And, you know, I mean, the thought of that, your club's not going to be there anymore. But I mean, me and Gallagher, we had an emergency like phone conversation that night, and we decided that if they went out of business, that was it. I was never going to nail my colours to any other mast. So, you know, that's your club and that's it, you know. So it was, you know, it's a horrible thought, you know, and you know, the jokes that you were having to put up with from, you know, people that you'd been laughing at when they were laughing at you. It was, yeah. But thankfully, you know, we got through all that.
We did indeed. I mean, it's interesting actually, just picking up from what we were saying about how well might we have done. I mean, if you think about it, you know, we came second in the second division this season, 76-77. Wolves got promoted in first. They were champions.
Yeah.
Forest were third, and they went up. And then they won the league that season. And then, of course, went on to win the European Cup back-to-back.
Yeah. But,
you know, and so that's what I'm really saying. I think football was very, very different then. It wasn't like now, where if you get promoted, your odds on to go back down. We might have done really, really well, because I think we had the makings of a very decent team.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, as I think, you know, as you were saying, the heart was ripped out of the club really when Eddie Mack went. I mean, supposedly the players, there was a deputation led by Ray Wilkins to get him to stay, but they both parties refused to back down, and that was the end of it. So, yeah, you don't know, because if anyone had said to me in 77, when Forest just about edged out Bolton, I think, at the end to go up with us, that they'd win the league and the League Cup the following season, I would have laughed at them, even though they looked a decent side when in 77, when I saw them down at the bridge when we beat them 2-1 at the end of that season. I would have, you know, I would have thought no chance. So perhaps you're right, you know, with that gung-ho, never say die attitude, it might have got us through.
Well, we'll never know, will we, Neil? And that's the kind of joy of it in a way, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you know, turning really, well, you know, I say turning to the book, but the book is your journey, you know, through those four or five seasons. But
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure I know what the answer to this is going to be, because everybody I know of your vintage will say the same thing. But
yeah.
Favourite season or favourite matches from that period, favourite experiences?
69-70 season, definitely my favourite, still is. And I still consider that to be the Chelsea team. I mean, I could just go like Benetti, Webb, McCready, Hollins, Dempsey, Harris, Cook, Hudson, Osgood, Hutchinson, Houseman. I don't even have to think about it. You know, not forgetting Tommy Baldwin, who played in the final, you know, because Hudson was injured. Yeah, I mean, my favourite game was the Bruges one in 71, which I think a lot of people go back to that night. It's just a fantastic evening. I've never heard the noise like that at the Bridge. You know, up till then, it was just an amazing, amazing night. The way I was on the I was on the West Stand benches as well that night, and it was just an incredible atmosphere. And then, of course, there was extra time in that game, and we got two goals in the last period of extra time to take. And I got into trouble again because my dad said I was out too late. You know, even though I said it was Chelsea's fault, you know, blame them. Yeah, that was that was definitely my. My favourite game in those days, I would say.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, we've just done the 94-95 season, and of course...
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's very interesting talking about that Bruges game in that cup run and how it compared to the one in 71. And
71, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, you know, as you said earlier on, you were 16 as we went into the 72-73 season. So, you know... In some respects, those are the best kind of years of our lives, from like 16 to 21, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it like? What's the overriding memory of that time for you? What was it like for you growing up through that?
Well, I think it was I'm glad that, I mean, I was a little kid in the 60s. I grew up with the Beatles, you know, if you're talking about like the social side of it. And there just seemed to be something exciting happening every week. I mean, even as a little kid, I realised something was going on. You know, and then when you got to the 70s, what with the football, the, you know, the interest in football after our World Cup win in 66, it was a brilliant time for football and for music as well. I mean, you know, the likes of Bowie and people like that. And I was brought up, I feel sorry for it sounds like an old boy now, but I feel sorry for the rubbish they have to put up with now. And what I was brought up with, I think we definitely saw the best of both worlds in those days.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, I was 16 in, let me think, 80-81.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, grew up with punk, right?
Yeah.
And all of that, and always feel really blessed to have been that kind of age at that kind of time. Loads going on as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you talk about, you know, the Thatcher thing going on. There was lots to be really angry about. And as a kid of that age, you want to be angry about stuff.
I mean, I was really into Elvis Costello. I mean, I've worked with his drummer last year.
Oh, Pete really?
Thomas. Yeah.
Pete Thomas?
Well, he's done a few of our tracks, because I've still got publishing deals in France and out in the States, and I do stuff like for film and TV, and they use some of our stuff. And I did a few tracks with Pete Thomas and also Bowie's drummer, Woody Woodmansey.
Really? Blimey.
Yeah. Because our producer, Pat Collier, he was in the Vibrators, you know. And He went on to do Walking on Sunshine, you know, with Katrina and all that lot, and the Wonder stuff. So, yeah, so I'm still working with Pat to this day. A friendship that's gone on longer than I care to remember, really.
Well, it's a weird tangent, but you know, there's a link in there, as there always is. But, I mean, you know, Chelsea's got a remarkable relationship, I think, with music, hasn't it? You think of all the musicians and pop stars that have been associated with the club and still are.
Yeah, that's right. There's quite a few high profile. Well, I think Sex Pistols were, but was the was it Steve Jones
and Paul Cook?
Yeah, both Chelsea boys. Yeah.
When we won the title in 2005, I couldn't get a ticket for Bolton, so I watched it in some ropey pub in Pimlico on my own. On my own, would you believe?
Yeah.
With the equivalent of a padded cell.
Yeah.
And then when we'd won, you know, my phone was just buzzing, and all my mates said, who hadn't been able to go to Bolton, we're all going down to Stamford Bridge. We're going, come down. And we went down there, and there must have been 3,000 or 4,000 people in Fulham Road. Right, you know, the road's shut, police not quite knowing what to do.
Yeah.
And just got absolutely hammered. I ended up in the Imperial Pub dancing with Paul Cook.
Oh, right. Blimey.
Who was there doing the same thing. So there
I see. Yeah, brilliant night that was.
It was indeed.
April the 30th, 2005.
You've got a good memory for dates as well as everything else. Yeah.
Oh, look, you know, my missus, she thinks I'm a freak because we'll be watching a programme. Of course, I know all those years. And it came up the other night and it's some date in 1974. And I said, oh, that was a Friday. And bloody then hell. she pulls the telly and she said, is there something wrong with you? You know, because it's a bit, but I've always been like, you know, I can link it to dates and everything, you know, so. Even about other clubs, I know their dates and the like lineups, you know, and things which people think are freakish. But if you've got that type of brain, that's it, really.
Well, I mean, I'm sure on behalf of anybody who's read the book or on behalf of anybody who's about to read the book, I'd like to say how grateful we are to you, Neil, because and all my other mates who've got these mad encyclopedic memories like that. Mark Meehan and Kelvin Barker are exactly the same. Because I mean, if you asked me the last Chelsea game, I went, well, I'll tell you what, in 2 weeks' time, ask me what happened in Chelsea Palace and I won't remember.
No.
I mean, and I'm useless. So thank God for people like you and Kelvin and Mark for having such great memories and then putting it down in books so that we can be reminded of it. Because it's a very, very, apart from being lovely reading, because they're really great books, it's a really valuable service you provide as well.
Yeah, I'm starting on a third one this month as well for Pitch Publishing, and that's going to take in the John Neil side. It's going to go on from we'll cover like the period from 77 through some really dreadful years, and then like the rebirth, like the 82, 83, then 83, 84, which were like completely polar opposites of each other, where we just missed relegation and then got promoted. So yeah, I'm starting that for Pitch this month.
Well, I'm so glad you. I was going to ask you that anyway, funnily enough, because it's kind of glaringly obvious in a way that it has to happen.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
You've got to 77.
Yeah,
and I mean, I know because we've just done all these 50 years shows. You know, in fact, actually, because as I said, I've been re-releasing them, and I think I put up the 78, 79.
Yeah.
You know, episode.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, what did I say? Question, where were you when you were shit? Answer, season 1978 to 1979.
Oh my God,
because
what a season that was.
Yeah, it didn't really get much worse than that. But it has to be done. Somebody's got to do that period from 77 to 83, 84. So that's brilliant that you are.
Yeah, I'm doing that, yeah. I'm starting, which is about 9 months of work. But and I have to like really, it is so difficult, you know, because working in music, you work one way. But to write a book, I mean, I do about 2 pages 5 days a week, and it's God, you think of any reason not to to go up there and start writing again, but you know it's worth it in the end.
Yeah, well, it certainly has been. It's been
well,
it's been brilliant talking to you, Neil. But I mean, the book's fantastic. I would recommend it to anybody. What's your favourite bit of the book, do you think?
Well, Deeper Shade.
Mm.
I suppose. Towards the end of the 74-75 season, right, not favourite like memory, but I mean, I think that is still vivid, like the Tottenham game. But writing about the 76-77 season and the way, you know, because I suddenly, I said to Trudy, my wife, that, people are going to, it's just all doom and gloom, this book. I mean, there's no light relief to it until you get to the end of it, and then everything's on the upturn again. So it was definitely a relief when I got to the 76, 77 season. I was running out of adjectives, is what to say, to you, how bad we were during those times.
Well, indeed. Well, if you'd have finished at the Hull match, you would have definitely had a happy ending, but you can't do this book without saying what happened next, which is Eddie going. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I do get that. Now, you can get this and Rhapsody in Blue. So you get Deeper Shade of Blue and Rhapsody in Blue from Amazon.
Yeah, that's right. I think, yeah, it's all over the place. Yeah, Pitch, they've got it. I mean, it's been selling around the world as well. I mean, I think they've done quite well with it. I mean, I suppose they must have done fairly well because they've, commissioned me to do another one for them as well. So, yeah, that's really good news. And, as you say, I don't think anyone's really covered that period of time then. So, yeah, I thought I'd get. And also, it's going to be along the same lines. So I'm going to do the social history as well, and what I was up to, because I think that adds a little bit more, depth and first-hand experience.
I don't think you can beat it, Neil. As
No.
we were saying, I mean, anybody can write a book that. Well, actually, that's not true. But I mean, Tim, as we know, does a just an unbelievable job on chronicling
Yeah.
what goes on. But you have to be really good to do that as well, I think.
Yeah,
But
I
I
mean
think you
that.
can't beat the personal approach, is what you've done.
No, I mean I've read I've I I. took part in the crowdfunding for Tim's book,
Yeah.
Sextant. And I also got a few Christmases ago, I got Doherty's Diamonds and, that one, which I thought the research on that was unbelievable. I just don't know where he got it from. It's a really an amazing book, that.
No, he's. I mean, I know Tim very well. He's a great mate, and but he is a real detail merchant. And I think
Yeah.
that's the point, isn't it? Your personalities do come through your
Yeah.
writing in a way. So Tim was
Yeah.
always going to write that kind of a book.
Yeah.
Having read your book, you are a storyteller.
Yeah,
It's
that's
all
right.
about
Yeah.
stories and anecdotes, and I
Yeah,
don't think
that's
you would have
right.
done it
Yeah.
any other way. And I think it's all the better for it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, it's I listened to my wife Trudy, that she said, there are going to be blokes of your generation who will say, and I've had loads of messages like that from people, on Facebook and everything, saying, yeah, this is exactly what I went through and everything, and I remember this and I remember that, it's been brilliant to get those messages as well.
Well, there you go. I'm sure you'll get many more, Neil. Now,
Oh,
as I said
yeah.
earlier on, you very kindly gave me two books. I'm going to give one away as a competition prize. Do you have a question?
Yeah, what future star of the Dutch team in 1974 played in the European Cup Winners' Cup quarter final in 1971 for Bruges against Chelsea at the Bridge?
Right. So, which future Dutch international star played for Bruges against Chelsea in
Yeah.
the 1971 Cup Winners' Cup? It was the semi quarter final, wasn't it? Quarter final.
Quarter final.
Quarter final.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, if you know the answer to that question, I'll repeat it again. What future Dutch international star played for Bruges against Chelsea in the quarter final of the Cup Winners' Cup in 1971? If you know the answer to that, then email chelseafancast at gmail. Dot com, as you know the address by now, people. If you do that, I'll pick out a winner randomly on Monday night's show next week. So that'll be Monday, I think it's the 16th, but
Yeah.
our first kind of post-match show. So I'll pick out a winner, and I'll send you a copy of Neil's book, and you can thank me for it now because it's bloody good and you will enjoy it.
Thanks.
Which is a great way to end it on, Neil. Thanks
Yeah,
so much
brilliant.
for coming
Yeah.
along and spending some time, not just talking about the book, but about just a very fascinating period in Chelsea's history. I've
Yeah.
really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that great. Yeah. I'd like to do it again for when the next one comes out. That'd be brilliant.
You're invited back immediately for that one. When do you think it'll be out?
It's supposed to be out next May.
Well, good luck with all of that. And Neil, if you find yourself, at the Stamford Bridge soon, come and find me for a
I
pint. It'd
definitely will do,
be
yeah.
lovely to buy you a pint. Well,
Yeah, that'd be great.
brilliant. Well, there you go. Neil Fitzsimon, author of Deeper Shade of Blue and A Rhapsody in Blue. Thank you so much on behalf of all the Chelsea fan cast for coming on and sharing some great tales about your books. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.